He tried to formulate another plan quickly, but all of them led to him having to enter the guild house. He was confident in his ability to protect himself using his shield, but he wasn't sure if his magic would be detected or not by the Empire agents outside. It only took him a few moments to come to the conclusion that he had to take the chance. He simply couldn't leave Neela here to suffer her fate at the hands of this Shiva. He had to rescue her. He remembered seeing a guard on top of the roof from when he and Ren were high up on the city wall, and knew if the guard could reach the roof, there had to be an entrance into the building from up there. Earlier that day, he had come up with a plan to neutralize anyone that got in his way without killing them. He just hoped it would work in practice. He knew time was important, but he guessed Neela wasn't in any immediate danger of being killed outright. He reasoned that if all Shiva wanted was her dead, he would have instructed his men to kill her back in Helveel, not bring her all the way back to Stelgad unharmed. He obviously wanted to drag out her suffering as long as possible for his own perverse pleasure, and that should give Lusan the time he needed. Lusan returned to the back of the building. He soon discovered that the far rear corner was out of direct sight from the tavern, which was by now much quieter than it had been earlier that night. Taking one last look around to make sure nobody could see him, especially any Empire agents, he erected a shield around himself using only enough power to stop a blade or crossbow bolt. I guess nobody inside the building would be capable of using magic against him, and keeping his magical power output low might mean he remained hidden from any Empire agents on the streets at the front of the building. After one last look to check that nobody was watching him, he began to levitate himself up to the roof. He was fortunate that the man on the roof was actually looking in the opposite direction, and he also seemed to be watching the surrounding rooftops, not the streets below. When Lusan landed on the rooftop, he closed the gap between them as quickly and quietly as he could. But the man heard his approach anyway, and quickly removed two nasty-looking knives from his belt. Lusan didn't slow his pace at all, and if it were not for his shield, he would have impaled himself on the man's knives as he crashed into them. As soon as Lusan was close enough to the man, he erected a second force field around him and adjusted it to make it soundproof, just as he had done in the forest with Ren on their way to Stelgad. He knew he could have done it easily from the edge of the roof, but it would have taken more power to project it that far, and he wanted to use as little as possible so close to Empire agents. The man stood only inches from Lusan, wide-eyed and stabbing at him furiously with his daggers, but to no effect. They simply bounced off his shield. Seeing that his weapons were useless against Lusan, he tried to back away, but was stopped in his tracks by the invisible force field that enclosed him. Next, he tried calling for help, but that too was useless. Eventually, he seemed to understand he was trapped and completely at the mercy of Lusan.
"What do you want with me?" he asked uneasily.
Lusan tried to be as intimidating as he could, tilting his head slightly and grinning at him before he answered, but he couldn't help thinking he probably just looked a little dim-witted instead.
"I want to know where you would be holding my friend prisoner within your guild headquarters. She was brought in earlier tonight," Lusan replied.
"And why should I tell you that?" the man asked, regaining some of his composure.
"Because if you don't, I'll increase the temperature inside that force field you're standing in and cook you alive until you talk," Lusan said calmly, hoping his threat would be believed.
The man searched Lusam's eyes, as if the answer to whether he was bluffing or not could be found there, but remained silent.
"Okay, your choice," Lusan said, slowly increasing the temperature inside the force field containing the man.
He had no intention of killing the man, only scaring him into talking. Even if he had wanted to carry out his threat, it would have used too much magic, and the Empire agents would certainly sense his presence. The man began to sweat profusely as the temperature rose inside the force field, but still he remained silent.
"You know, I once did this to a thief in Helveel that attempted to steal my coin pouch," Lusan lied. "It wasn't pretty when he exploded inside the force field. I remember thinking what remained didn't really resemble a man at all. But who knows, maybe you won't explode the same way as he did."
"Okay, okay, stop. I'll tell you what you want to know," he pleaded with Lusan.
"I'm listening," Lusan replied, feeling rather pleased that his ruse had worked.
"There are three cells in the basement. Your friend should be in one of those. That's where they keep any prisoners that they bring here. But I don't know anything about your friend, I swear."
"Then let's discuss how I would reach this basement of yours. And don't even consider lying to me. I can tell with my magic if you do," Lusan lied again.
The man was more than happy to give Lusam a detailed explanation of the house layout, even suggesting the number of guards that may still be on duty at this late hour. Once Lusam was happy he had all the information he needed, he placed a finger on the man's shoulder and extended his awareness into the man's body, instantly finding his meager reserves of magic. It took only a moment to drain all but a very small amount of his magic reserves, leaving him with the bare minimum to survive. The man dropped like a sack of coal to the ground, unconscious at Lusam's feet. Lusam was surprised at how well his plan had worked. It seemed a very effective way to incapacitate someone without really harming them physically. But he didn't envy the man when he eventually awoke to what would be a stinker of a headache, just like the one he remembered all too well. Lusam hoped his magic hadn't been detected by the Empire agents, but he needed to know for sure before he continued. He crept to the edge of the roof and carefully peered over to the street below. Three stories below him stood the same two Empire agents he'd seen from the alleyway not 10 minutes earlier, neither of whom seemed the least bit interested in the building he was now standing on top of. As if to confirm his assumption, they both started to move away down the street in the same direction he had seen all the others travel, obviously to wherever their next patrol point was in the city. Breathing a sigh of relief, Lusam moved back away from the edge of the building and began looking for a way into the guild house. It didn't take him long to discover a hatch, but he found it to be firmly locked from the inside. He placed his ear to the hatch and listened for movement or voices, but all was silent from the other side. He gripped the iron ring that formed the handle of the hatch and pulled gently. The hatch seemed to be held in place at a single point, most probably by a simple throw bolt or something similar. Lusam had never tried to manipulate his force field through a solid object before, so he had no idea if it would work or not. His only other choices were to blast through the door, which would make far too much noise and could alert the Empire agents either with the sound or the sudden release of magic, so that was out of the question, or he could burn his way through the hatch, or even the lock for that matter. But the smell of burning would likely alert everyone inside the building, sending them all in search of a potential fire. So he was left with his first choice. Use his force field to manipulate the lock, if he could. He knelt next to the hatch and formed a small sphere-shaped force field in his hand. He concentrated on pushing the force field through the wooden hatch, but it was like trying to push any other solid object through it. Impossible. He tried again, but this time he concentrated on forming the sphere on the other side of the hatch, and it seemed to work. He wasn't sure how this would help him, though, as he couldn't see what he was trying to manipulate at the other side of the hatch. Several minutes passed while he tried various solutions, none of which seemed to have the desired effect. So then he came up with another idea. This time, he created a sphere that allowed things to move freely from the outside in, but not allow anything that was already inside to pass back out again. Manipulating the sphere backwards and forwards, it was only a matter of time before it snagged on a throw bolt, opening it with a resounding click. Chapter 23. Lusam froze and listened for any movement or sound coming from the other side of the hatch, but heard nothing, so he carefully opened the hatch, revealing a pitch-black hole below. He created a small, dimly lit orb within the hatch entrance and revealed a sturdy-looking ladder that led down to the floor below. He carefully climbed down the ladder, closing the hatch behind him, and found himself at the end of a long, narrow corridor. The floor was a series of black and white squares the entire length of the corridor, reminding him of a board game his grandmother had often tried to teach him to play when he was much younger. Keeping his light dimmed, he crept forward towards the end of the corridor, but he didn't get far before he triggered a trap on the floor, which sent several darts shooting out of the sidewall at his legs. Fortunately, his shield stopped them mid-flight, and they fell harmlessly to the ground at his side. Looking down at them, he recognized them as the same type of darts that had rendered Neela unconscious in Helveel. No doubt these two were poisoned in a similar manner, he thought to himself. By the time he reached the end of the corridor, he had triggered another three similar traps, all no doubt meant as a first line of defense against any unwelcome intruders or potential assassins who managed to enter via the roof hatch, as he had done. At the end of the corridor, he came to a flight of stairs leading down to the first floor of the building. In stark contrast with the upper floor, the first floor was well lit, with evenly spaced oil lanterns on the walls and a thick red carpet on the floor running the full length of the corridor. Numerous wooden doors lined the corridor, but only two rooms showed any signs of light coming from under their doors, indicating most of the rooms were either empty or their occupants were asleep, which suited Lusan just fine either way. He moved quietly down the long corridor, only creaking two floorboards as he went, but it was enough to stir one of the room's occupants to stick his head out of his door to see who was passing by at that time of night. The instant Lusan heard the door opening, he spun around to face the potential threat, enveloping the man in a soundproof force field. Quietly, he walked back towards where the man was standing, and then manipulated his force field to carry the man back inside his room and away from the corridor. Once he was well inside the room, Lusan touched his arm and drained him of all but a tiny amount of his magic reserves. The man collapsed instantly, and Lusan gently lowered him to the ground using his force field, before cancelling it completely and returning to the corridor, making sure to quietly close the door behind himself. When he reached the top of the next set of stairs, he stopped in his tracks. Standing at the bottom of the stairs, next to what must be the main entrance, he could see two large men guarding the door. They were chatting between themselves mostly, but occasionally they seemed to be directing their conversation to someone else out of sight. Three or even more people to deal with at the same time would be a big problem so close to the front of the building. The amount of magic he would need to use to project three or more force fields at the same time and at such a distance apart would certainly be detected by the Empire agent standing only a few paces away at the other side of the door. He moved back away from the stairs to think of a way around it. It seemed the main problem wasn't the men at the bottom of the stairs, but the Empire agents outside. If he could time his attack to coincide with their absence from directly outside the building, he would stand a much better chance of succeeding without being discovered. He quickly found a room likely to have a window that overlooked the street at the front of the building, and quietly opened the door. The room was thankfully unoccupied and looked like some kind of storage area. Empty boxes and crates were strewn all over the floor, but no windows of any kind were to be seen. He closed the door gently and moved on to the next. This time he wasn't so lucky. The room had not one, but two occupants in it. Fortunately, they were rather occupied together, not even noticing his entrance, and he was easily able to enclose them both within the same soundproof force field before either of them reacted to his presence. He neutralized both of them quickly, as he had done the others. Then he went to the window. Carefully, he peered around the edge of the curtain to the main street below. He watched as two Empire agents casually chatted between themselves, completely oblivious to his actions above. Good, he thought to himself, realizing that maybe not all of these Empire agents were as powerful as he had been led to believe, although he had no desire to test that theory any time soon. 10 minutes later, they departed, heading in the same direction as the others had done previously. He knew he had less than 10 minutes until the next group arrived to replace them. He moved swiftly to the door and listened for any movement outside, but nothing stirred. He opened the door and headed straight back to the staircase, finding the two large men in exactly the same place he had last seen them. He was still unable to see anyone else from where he stood, but felt sure there was at least one other person just out of sight of him. From the top of the stairs, he encased both of the large men in force fields and moved swiftly down the staircase to their position. He ignored the two men and instead turned the corner to confront whoever else was out of sight. But to his surprise, there was nobody there. Returning to the two large men guarding the door, he quickly neutralized both, smiling to himself at the ridiculously small power reserves both men contained. He wasn't sure what to do with the two large men. If he moved them into a side room, they may be missed because they were no longer guarding the door. But if they were left where they were and someone spotted them there, the alarm would be raised for sure. Lusan opened the closest door and found it to be an office of some kind. He was about to conceal the men inside the office when he spotted a tray with three decanters half full of brandy on a desk at the far end of the room. He quickly retrieved two of the decanters, emptying most of their contents back into the third, then returned to the two unconscious men in the hallway. He poured a small amount of brandy into each of their mouths, then splashed a little on their faces and clothes, before placing an almost empty decanter in each of their hands. If anyone passed by, they would assume they were merely unconscious through drink and hopefully not raise the alarm. The man on the roof had described the door that would lead to the cells, and it seemed his description had been very accurate, as Lusan found it exactly where he was told it would be. He opened the door and entered the room before quietly closing it once again behind himself. He found himself standing in a well-lit room which was obviously used as some kind of weapon storage. Weapons of all types lined the walls, even some strange implements that he guessed could only be used to torture people hung from the walls. Suddenly, a familiar sight grabbed his attention. On the far wall hung Neela's knife belt, containing all but one of her knives, the one he still had. He retrieved the belt and replaced the missing knife, then made his way to the far end of the room where the door should lead to the cells. He somehow expected the door to be locked, but it wasn't. When he opened it, he was met with pitch-black darkness beyond and a stone staircase leading down into a basement of some kind. He created one of his light orbs and entered the darkness, closing the door quietly behind himself. Descending the staircase, he couldn't help noticing the stench down here. It smelt almost as bad as the river outside Stelgad. When he reached the bottom of the staircase and could see the room contained no guards, he called out quietly, "Neela, are you down here?" He heard some quiet rustling coming from one of the cells at the far end of the room, so he called out once again, "Neela, is that you?"
"Lusam, is that you?"
Neela called back from the darkness.
"Yes, it's me. I've come to get you out of here,"
Lusam replied, as he approached the cell he heard her voice originate from. He reached out to test the strength of the cell door, but was grabbed through the bars by a very excited Neela. She hugged him so tightly that she seemed almost intent on pulling him through the small gaps between the bars and into the cell with her.
"Oh, Lusam, I didn't think you'd come for me. I thought something terrible had happened to you in Hellfield,"
Neela said through tears of joy.
"How could I leave the girl I love?"
Lusam said playfully, then almost jumped out of his skin when another voice spoke from the side of him.
"So this is your lover boy you've been telling me all about, is it?"
"Yes, it is, and you'd better be nice to him, or I'll have him leave you to rot in that cell of yours, Alexia,"
replied Neela, still squeezing the breath out of Lusam through the bars of her cell.
"Friend of yours?"
Lusam asked, nodding his head towards Alexia.
"Yes, she's a good friend from my old guild. It's a long story, but now probably isn't the best time to tell it."
"I agree. Any minute now we may be surrounded by Shiva's men, or worse still, Empire agents. Let's get you out of that cage. Stand back while I blast the lock," Lusam said.
"Hey, lover boy,"
Alexia said in a mocking tone. Lusam turned to see her smiling and pointing at something behind him. Then she added,
"The keys are over there." "Be nice, Alexia,"
said Neela, quietly laughing along with her friend. Lusam grabbed the keys and quickly opened both cell doors, then handed Neela her knife belt.
"Oh, thanks, Lusam. I was wondering what Skelly had done with that,"
she said, taking the belt back and fastening it around her waist.
"Who's Skelly?"
Lusam asked, confused.
"Skelly is the man who brought me back here, the one I fought in Hellveal."
"Oh, I see," Lusam said.
"Do you know if there's another way out of this building other than the two main doors?"
"I'm sure there is. All thieves' guilds have secret entrances, but they're only known to the highest-ranking members within the guild usually. I have no idea where to look for one here. Sorry,"
Neela replied.
"Okay, then we may have a problem. Do you remember that strange man in black robes that followed us in Hellveal?"
asked Lusam.
"Yes, I do, but I've seen a lot more of them since leaving Hellveal. They also did something creepy inside our heads when we first left Hellveal, but after that they left us alone. They were even at the northern gate when I arrived here tonight, and also outside this building,"
Neela replied.
"Yes, I know. I saw them myself. They seem to be everywhere, and they're all looking for me, to kill me. They can also read your mind, so I can't tell you how we plan to escape the city in case they learn it from you when we leave here. I'm sorry, you'll just have to trust me,"
he said, looking at Neela apologetically.
"It's fine, I understand,"
Neela replied.
"Thanks, Neela. One other thing I must ask of you. When we leave this room, no matter what happens, you must stay very close to me, both of you, and under no circumstances attack anyone. I can protect you both within my magical shield, but the further away from me that you are, the more power I must use to maintain it, and that could quite easily lead to us being discovered by the men we just spoke of. Hopefully, we can escape without anyone noticing us leaving,"
Lusam said. Both Neela and Alexia nodded their agreement. Then all three headed for the stairs leading back up into the main building, Lusam leading the way and the other two very close behind him. When they reached the door at the top of the staircase, Lusam listened once again for any sounds coming from the other side of the door, but heard nothing. Opening the door quietly, He stepped out into the well-lit room with Neela close on his heels, and came face to face with over 24 well-armed men who seemed to have been patiently waiting for them to re-emerge from the basement. One of the men stepped forward and away from the main group of men. Liu Sam noticed 4 large men armed with crossbows take up positions behind him, ready to defend him against any sudden attacks they might make. Liu Sam guessed he must be their leader, or at least a high-ranking member of the guild.
"I really don't know which one of you to kill first. The one who thinks he can enter my property, attack my men at will, and somehow casually walk away again. Or the fool who thinks she can steal my property and live to brag about it by simply moving cities," the man said menacingly.
Liu Sam glanced behind himself to make sure Neela and Alexia were both still close enough to be within his shield's protection. But to his surprise, Alexia was nowhere to be seen. The man saw Liu Sam look behind himself and laughed out loud.
"You have nowhere to run, boy."
"Never crossed my mind," Liu Sam replied calmly. "I suggest you let us pass, unless you want to suffer the same fate as your other men."
The man's face turned scarlet with rage.
"Well, looks like you just volunteered to be first, boy."
"So I guess you're Shiva, the murdering sack of bile that killed my friends,"
Neela said vehemently, emerging from behind Liu Sam to stand at his side.
"Yes, I'm Shiva. And yes, I killed them all like I'm about to kill you. Most of them screamed and begged for mercy as I slowly tortured them to death. But rest assured, your deaths will be far more unpleasant," Shiva said through gritted teeth.
Neela noticed Skelly enter the room from the far doorway. He started pushing his way to the front of the crowd, and all the men made way for him without complaint.
"In that case, as the highest surviving member of the Crow's Guild, I invoke my right to blood vengeance. I challenge you to single combat, to the death,"
Neela said, loud enough for all in the room to hear.
"What?"
Liu Sam exclaimed, looking sharply at Neela. Shiva burst out laughing, closely followed by all his men, except Skelly, who stood silently watching the proceedings unfold.
"There are no living Crow's Guild members left, girl, which means there's no longer a Crow's Guild for you to lead. So your claim for blood vengeance is meaningless. They're all dead apart from you, and I plan to rectify that small oversight right now," Shiva said, bringing forth another round of laughter from his men behind him.
Chapter 24.
"That's not true,"
Alexia said loudly, emerging from the shadows within the basement doorway. Shiva turned to one of his men and asked,
"Why does she still draw breath? I told you to kill her."
The man visibly paled at the question, obviously aware of what his failure would mean to his future well-being. He seemed to be trying to form some kind of reply, but never had the chance to voice it before Alexia once again regained everyone's attention.
"My name is Alexia, and I am a current member of the Crow's Guild, as I have been most of my life. I can confirm that Neela here is indeed currently the highest-ranking member of the Crow's Guild, and therefore she does have the right to claim blood vengeance on behalf of the Crow's Guild. Her guild. I also bore witness to the execution of 8 of our guild members. They approached your guild leader under the flag of truce. I saw them publicly declare their allegiance to the Hawks Guild if they would take them, and denounce their future rights to blood vengeance if they would not. Now, I'm sure I don't have to remind anyone in this room of how important our unwritten laws are as thieves. Without them, we would cease to exist as guilds at all, and become nothing more than solo pickpockets or petty murderers out there on the streets. The right of blood vengeance is one of our most important laws, as is our choice to waver it. I fully understand that no guild is ever obliged to take on a member of an ousted guild. If that member, however, denounces his future right to blood vengeance, he should be spared and exiled from the city, under penalty of death should he ever return. That is our law, is it not?"
Alexia said, looking at all the faces in the crowd before her. A rumble of assent broke forth from the armed men, many of them nodding their agreement.
"Well, I can tell you what I witnessed with my own eyes. This man standing before you, the man you know as Shiva, brutally cut down 8 of my guild members, even after they had declared their allegiance to the Hawks Guild and denounced any future rights to blood vengeance,"
Alexia said, now standing beside Liu Sam. A low murmur broke out amongst the men, confusion as to what to do about the accusations leveled at their leader, who, by the looks of him, was about to charge the 3 of them single-handedly.
"What are you doing?"
Liu Sam whispered, loud enough for Neela to hear. She turned her head and whispered back, but was cut short by the voice of Skelly calling for silence.
Our laws are clear, and the right of blood vengeance is certainly one of our most important laws. But I urge you to reconsider, Neela. You simply can't win this battle, not when you're surrounded by brainless people,
Skelly said, looking directly at Neela. The man chuckled at his comments, and even Shiva smiled at his insult. Neela almost spat back an insult of her own, until she suddenly remembered his words. Shiva surrounds himself with brainless people, ones who will blindly follow his orders. Neela turned back to Lusam and whispered, Can you divide the room with your force field and keep Shiva separate from the rest of them?
I suppose so, but why would you want to do any of this?
Lusam asked, confused.
Lusam, I need to do this, for myself and for my friends he tortured and killed. Alexia told me some of the horrible things Shiva did to them after I left Stelgad. I could never live with myself if I simply walked away and let him live for what he's done. I know it will be hard for you, but you must let me fight this man fairly. No tricks, no shields, but you must keep the others separated from us. Most wouldn't interfere with our laws, but from what Skelly told me, a few of them would be more than happy for Shiva to gain an advantage by any means possible,
Neela whispered. So many emotions ran through Lusam's mind at that moment, he was hard-pressed to know which one to address first. He was about to speak when Neela leaned into him and kissed his cheek. She turned his head to face her and said,
Trust me, Lusam, I know what I'm doing.
Then she walked away from him to the center of the room. Lusam did as she asked and cut the room in two with his force field, all of them and Shiva on one side and Shiva's men on the other.
I invoke my right as leader of the Crow's Guild to the right of blood vengeance. Do you accept my challenge, Shiva, and agree to uphold our laws regarding the victor and vanquished?
Neela said, her voice carrying throughout the room.
You are no challenge to me, girl,
Shiva replied, smirking. He removed his two knives from his belt and positioned himself ready to attack Neela.
We'll see,
Neela replied, readying her own enchanted knives. They began to slowly circle each other, neither willing to make the first challenge. But Neela did notice he seemed to be trying to maneuver her towards his own men, leaving her exposed from behind. She hoped Lusam had her back covered with his shield. If not, she felt sure she was about to feel the sting of a poisoned dart or even a blade in her back. Sure enough, as they continued to circle each other, Neela noticed several of the tiny poisoned darts on the floor next to two of the men. They also had a confused look on their faces and were trying to silently communicate something to Shiva as they continued their deadly dance. Three more times they circled, and three more times the number of tiny darts increased on the floor. Shiva grew more and more impatient, and after the fourth unsuccessful pass, he launched into an attack on Neela. Neela sidestepped his attack and quickly countered with her own much more accurate attack, scoring a deep cut to his left arm. He grimaced with the pain, but didn't make a sound.
What's the matter, Shiva? This little girl too fast for you?
Neela teased mercilessly. He roared his displeasure and launched himself into a frenzied attack against her. His knives moved with blinding speed, so fast Lusam could barely see his hands, but Neela matched every one of his attacks with a perfect block of her own. At first, Lusam thought Neela was struggling to fight back and only just managing to block his vicious attacks. But as the fight progressed, it became clear to Lusam that she was simply choosing to fight this way. Neela purposefully put herself into a position that would have made it impossible for Shiva's men to miss her with their poisoned darts and even stayed there for several seconds. She noticed Shiva chancing a quick glance over her shoulder to his man behind her, and she made him pay for it with another deep cut, this time to his right arm.
Tell me, Shiva, how did you ever become leader of the Hawks Guild? It certainly can't be because of your prowess with a blade. I've seen more skill with a blade from circus performers,
she said, grinning at him. Once again he launched himself at her. But this time she didn't simply block his attacks, she struck back. Every time his guard opened even slightly, she scored a hit. Time and again she opened up small cuts on his arms and hands, and even one time on his cheek when he overextended his attack. It was clear to everyone in the room by now that Neela wasn't simply beating him, she was humiliating him in front of everyone there. Blood soaked his arms and torso where she had scored her countless hits, but he hadn't managed to score a single hit on Neela.
I'm confused, Shiva. How can you possibly still be the leader of the Hawks Guild after all this time, when others in this very room are much better with a blade than you? The man you sent to capture me, for example. I fought Skelly in Helveel, and I can assure you that he's much better than you. Please, tell everyone here what your secret is, or I will,
Neela said, easily blocking his attacks and now striking back at will.
Ah, I see the cat has your tongue, Shiva. Well, I'll tell you how he managed to defeat all his enemies over the years and remain in control. He had them all poisoned, so the fights were never fair,
Neela said. There was a ripple of conversation that flowed through the men, interrupted by Shiva shouting,
She lies! Kill her! Kill them all! That's an order!
Nobody moved.
So I lie, do I? Then explain what all the poisoned darts are doing on the floor over there,
Neela said, pointing at the small pile of darts with her knife. He didn't reply, but instead launched into a renewed frenzied attack, bellowing like a banshee as he lunged at Neela, trying to take advantage of her while her guard was down as she pointed towards the darts. Lusam gasped, expecting Shiva to score a deadly hit on her. But instead, she simply sidestepped his attack, spun full circle, and the fight was suddenly over. Shiva stood perfectly still in the center of the room with his throat cut and a dagger protruding from his chest, and a strange look of denial on his face. Neela slowly walked over to where he now stood, bleeding out, watching him try to voice some last unintelligible statement, and said,
You don't deserve to lead this guild, Shiva. In fact, you no longer even deserve to breathe.
She took hold of her knife still lodged in his chest and yanked it out, sending him crashing to the floor, where he twitched a couple of times, before never moving again. The room was stunned into complete silence. Nobody knew what the outcome of this would be. Their laws allowed the victor from the Rite of Blood Vengeance to become leader of the vanquished leader's guild unchallenged. Neela stepped forward to address the men.
The Rite of Blood Vengeance has been satisfied. I hereby forego any further Rite to Blood Vengeance in the future against any member of the Hawks Guild. I have no wish to take control of your guild as leader. Therefore, leadership should pass to the strongest amongst you as our laws dictate. And I believe that to be Skelly, unless, of course, anyone wishes to challenge him for the right of leadership.
Neela said, looking directly at Skelly, who nodded his head and even looked like he might have a smile hidden just under the surface of his ice-cold exterior. Skelly slowly walked towards where Neela, Lusam and Alexia were now standing, Lusam only just managing to cancel his magical barrier before Skelly walked straight into it and narrowly avoiding having to explain his magical abilities in front of so many people. Skelly paused in front of Neela, as if he were about to say something. But instead, he turned to address the men in the room.
I hereby claim leadership of the Hawks Guild as highest-ranking member. If any man here wishes to challenge my authority, step forward now,
Skelly half-shouted at the men in front of him. Unsurprisingly, no one stepped forward.
Anyone not wishing to serve me as guild leader is free to leave this building and city by nightfall without reprisals. All who remain do so of their own free will. And as such, fealty to me will be assumed with all consequences for breaking that oath fully upheld as our laws dictate.
There was a brief silence, followed by a chant of,
Skelly! Skelly! Skelly!
All the other men soon joined in, creating a cacophony of sound within the room. Skelly held up his hands to silence his men, and they quickly obeyed. He turned to Neela, but was speaking to his men as he did so.
My first declaration as leader is as follows. All surviving members of the Crows Guild are free to join the Hawks Guild upon pledging their allegiance to us, if they wish to do so. If they do not wish to join us, then so be it. But they will not be harmed unless they attack any of us first,
Skelly said, still looking at Neela.
Thanks, Skelly, but I think you're looking at what's left of the Crows Guild right here in this room,
Neela said sadly, glancing over her shoulder at Alexia.
Actually, according to a report I read when we first got back here, we know the whereabouts of another 7 members, possibly 8. Shiva had planned to round them up after you were imprisoned here. Then he planned to torture and kill them one by one in front of you while he forced you to watch as punishment for stealing his property,
Skelly said.
But I give you my word they won't be harmed, Neela.
Neela couldn't believe that another 7 or 8 of her friends might still be alive in Stelgad. She desperately wanted to know who they were, but she knew she couldn't linger here any longer than necessary with Lusam's life in such danger. It also occurred to her that even if she did know their names, it wouldn't change how she felt about Lusam and her plans to remain with him. Neela nodded her thanks to Skelly.
Okay, show's over here, people. Get back to whatever you lazy dogs were doing before all this started. The sun'll be up soon enough and we have a big day ahead of us,
Skelly bellowed at his men, most of whom were more than happy to return to their beds for what little remained of the night.
Skelly waited until the room was empty, before turning back to Neela and saying,
"You're far better with that blade than I gave you credit for. You should join us. I could always use a member with your skills, and I doubt, having seen your display just now, that anyone would resent you a high-ranking position here. Well, not for long, anyway," he said with a grin.
"Thanks for the offer, but I have plans of my own just now," Neela said, smiling at Lusam.
"I see. Well, if you need anything, just let me know. I hate owing debts to anyone."
"Actually, there are two things you can do for me," Neela said hopefully.
"I don't remember owing you two debts," Skelly replied with raised eyebrows. After a moment, he asked, "What two things?"
"We had an employee of the Crow's Guild that sold out some of our men to Shiva, the innkeeper of the Plucked Pheasant. He was installed there by our guild many years ago and paid well for his work. His job was to inform us of any wealthy travellers or expensive cargo that flowed through the city, but he decided to sell out his own men once it became more profitable for him,"
Neela replied. Skelly shook his head, obviously just as incensed at the innkeeper's betrayal as Neela had been.
"No matter how much you do for some people, or however much they're paid, their loyalty is never guaranteed. I think it's about time the Plucked Pheasant had a change of ownership," Skelly said menacingly.
"I agree, but don't make his departure too swift, if you understand my meaning," said Neela.
"Oh, I won't. You can count on that," replied Skelly, grinning. "What was the second thing you needed?" he asked.
"We need to leave this building unseen. There are a lot of men outside looking for my friend here, and they all want to kill him. I hope to avoid that if we can,"
Neela said, winking at Lusam.
"We have enough men here to take care of them for you. Consider it a parting gift," Skelly said.
"No, you don't," Lusam said, emerging from behind Neela. "They're not your regular thugs. Your weapons would be useless against them, and your men would be cut down far too easily." "Listen to him, Skelly. He speaks the truth. Do you remember the men in black robes we've been seeing all the way from Helvil?" Neela said.
"Yes, what about them?"
"Well, they're all trying to find and kill Lusam, every one of them," Neela replied.
"Okay, but they're still only men. They will bleed like any other men," Skelly said confidently.
Lusam stepped forward to stand face to face with Skelly and said,
"See if you can make me bleed."
"What?"
Skelly replied, shocked at Lusam's request.
"Make me bleed," Lusam repeated.
Skelly's hand moved so fast that Lusam would never have been able to avoid being struck by his blow. But instead, his knife bounced harmlessly off his magical shield. His eyes went wide as he tried time and again to score a non-lethal hit anywhere on Lusam's body.
"Now do you see? There may be dozens of men out there, each able to shield themselves like I can. Many of them may also be far more powerful than me. But regardless, your men wouldn't stand a chance," Lusam said.
"So that's how you got past my men so easily," said Skelly thoughtfully.
"Yes. Your men will be fine after they have plenty of rest. They'll probably wake with headaches, the likes of which they've never known, but they will recover in time,"
Lusam replied, not envying his men when they did finally wake.
"I have a question for you. How did you know I was here? I tried to cover my tracks pretty well, I thought," Lusam asked.
Skelly laughed out loud, then replied,
"Yes, you did. But only a few minutes earlier, I had been speaking with the two men guarding our main entrance. When I returned from the kitchen, I found them both unconscious on the floor, each holding a decanter of my favourite brandy. I know neither of them can handle their drink that well, but even they couldn't drink themselves unconscious in less than 3 minutes."
Lusam smiled, then replied,
"I thought they had been speaking with someone else out of sight, but when I reached the bottom of the stairs, I only found those two."
"So can you help us get out of here unseen, Skelly?"
Neela interrupted.
"I know you must have access to one or more secret escape routes out of this building in case of emergencies. I also know keeping their existence a secret is paramount, but I did just turn down the job of guild leader, and I also give you my word that your secret will remain just that."
Skelly remained silent long enough for Neela to start doubting that he would reveal their secret escape routes to them at all. She knew Skelly was considering the implications of sharing such important information with an outsider. Letting the wrong person know the location of his secret escape route, in effect, completely negated its usefulness and could possibly compromise his own life should he ever find himself in need of using it.
"I understand your reluctance to reveal your escape route, Skelly. I really do. I've already given you my word that I won't seek any further retribution over my dead guildmates, as well as never to reveal your secrets. But if my word is not good enough for you, then think of it this way instead. If we wanted you dead, Lusam here could kill you with a single thought, or he could collapse the entire building with everyone inside from 100 paces away. We certainly wouldn't need knowledge of a secret escape route to kill you,
Neela said, hoping he didn't take it as a threat instead of a statement of fact. Skelly remained silent for a while longer, studying Lusam as he did so. Then he turned back to Neela and said,
I suppose you have a good point there. Are you sure I can't convince you all to join the Hawks Guild?
He replied, suddenly more interested in Lusam than he'd been at any time since meeting him.
Quite sure, thank you,
Neela replied.
That's a shame. With his talents, we could all make a fortune,
Skelly said, nodding in Lusam's direction.
Come, follow me. I'll get you all out of here unseen.
Chapter 25 Skelly led them towards the back of the building and opened a door that led to another basement. When they descended the stone stairs, they found themselves inside what looked like a disused wine cellar. Row after row of mostly empty wine racks lined the walls. At the far end of the room, there were 3 huge wooden barrels, 2 on their sides and 1 standing upright in the center. Lusam guessed they were once used for fermenting wine or some other alcoholic beverage, but they looked like they hadn't been used in a very long time. Skelly walked over to the huge barrel on the left and removed a knife from his belt. He reached around the side of the huge barrel and put the tip of his knife into a groove in one of the steel hoops that held the barrel together. There was a loud click, and the entire lid of the barrel swung inwards, creating a huge round doorway. Hanging inside the barrel were 3 lanterns, one of which Skelly picked up and was about to light when Lusam spoke.
We won't need that, he said, nodding at the lantern in Skelly's hand.
Skelly was about to disagree with him, but was cut short by the sudden appearance of Lusam's light orb hovering inside the giant barrel. To Neela's surprise, Skelly didn't even ask any questions about it. Instead, he simply hung the lantern back on its hook and continued as if nothing out of the ordinary had happened. When Lusam, Neela, and Alexia stepped inside the giant barrel, Skelly closed the door behind them, effectively sealing them all inside the wooden barrel. Skelly once again inserted the tip of his knife into 2 more slots. This caused a second door to spring open at the back of the barrel, revealing a long dark tunnel cut into the earth beyond.
Nate,
said Alexia, trying to peer past Skelly and the others to see what was in the tunnel ahead.
Follow me carefully, and stand only where I do, unless you want to find yourself resembling a pincushion,
Skelly said without humor. Lusam hadn't removed their shields yet, and decided it wise to keep them active until they at least reached the other side of the tunnel, just in case one of them should accidentally trigger any of the traps within the tunnel. Skelly led them through the tunnel, pointing out several places of danger on the way. Eventually, they reached another large round wooden doorway. Lusam guessed it was another huge barrel, and his suspicions were confirmed as Skelly operated the mechanism with his knife, and the lid swung inwards to reveal the inside of another giant barrel. They all stepped inside, and Skelly quietly closed the door behind them. Then he turned and indicated for them to remain silent. He went to the front of the barrel and slid open a small spy hole to check that the room beyond was empty. Seeing nobody there, he quietly said, "This door leads into a tavern we own at the rear of our guild house, but it's still important we aren't seen either entering or leaving the tavern by any of the patrons there. Once we emerge from here, we'll go up the staircase to the right, quietly. When we reach the top of the staircase, we'll turn right and enter a large food storage room. We can exit the tavern from within there. Stay behind me and stay silent." All 3 nodded their understanding, and after another quick check through the spy hole, Skelly sprung the door open to reveal a wine cellar not too dissimilar to the one they had just left within the guild house. They all silently followed Skelly up the right-hand staircase, which thankfully was made of solid stone, unlike the wooden staircase to the left, which Lusam felt sure would have creaked loud enough to alert everyone in the building of their presence. When they reached the top of the stairs, Skelly once again stopped and slid open another spy hole. Once he was satisfied the coast was clear, he quietly opened the door and led them all through and into a storage room on the right. The storage room wasn't that large. Most of the room was taken up with boxes of vegetables and meat hanging from the rafters. Skelly picked his way through all the boxes and cartons and made his way to a closed hatch on the far wall. He unbolted the hatch and quietly opened the door.
"I'm afraid this is where we part ways. But if you ever change your mind about joining us in the future, just come and see me. I'll make sure you're accepted and given a high rank within the guild. You have my word," Skelly said.
"Thanks. I'll bear that in mind,"
replied Neela, holding out her hand to him, which he took without hesitation.
"Good luck to you all. I have the feeling you might need it with what you told me earlier,"
Skelly said, looking at Lusam.
"Yes, thanks. About that, I'd appreciate it if you kept what you know about me a secret. I think the fewer people who know, the better. That goes for the guys in black robes too,"
Lusam said.
"Sure, I'll keep your secret, as I'm sure you'll keep mine. Nobody would ever believe me anyway, even if I told them. I'm not sure that even I do, and I saw it with my own eyes,"
he said, chuckling to himself.
"Thanks,"
said Lusam, smiling back and offering him his hand too. Alexia also bid him farewell. Then all three climbed through the hatch and found themselves in a dark alleyway at the side of the tavern, with the hatch being firmly bolted behind them.
"So now what, lover boy?"
Alexia said quietly in the darkness.
"Now we get out of here,"
Lusam whispered back.
"If she calls you that again, you have my permission to turn her into a toad or something equally disgusting,"
Neela whispered from behind. Lusam just smiled to himself, then headed off in the direction of the temple, with Neela and Alexia closely following behind. They only reached the second intersection before they turned a corner and came face to face with two Empire agents. Lusam saw the unexpected reaction of the two men and realized his mistake too late. He'd forgotten to cancel their magical shields. They would all be glowing like giant fireflies to the agent's mage sight. Instinctively, Lusam sent out a blast of force towards the two men, sending them hurtling into the wall behind, but not before one of them had managed to cast his silence spell on him. He couldn't speak, so he gestured to the others to follow him as he ran for the cover of the back streets. It didn't take long for another two Empire agents to show up, no doubt sensing the excessive use of magic. This time Lusam could see that they already had their shields in place. He gestured that they should all remain close together. Then he increased the strength of his shield around all three of them as they continued running towards the temple. It was a good job he had fortified his shield, because only moments later he was struck by two successive blasts from the pair of men chasing them. He held the blasts at bay with relative ease, but he could feel the instant drain on his reserves as each blast struck his shield. He knew if he was only shielding himself that it would have affected him much less, but with such a large area to protect, it quickly sapped his strength. Blast after blast pounded at his shield as they ran on towards their goal. At one point he turned and fired a shot back at his pursuers, only to see it fizzle on their shield with little or no effect. Noticing the bombardment intensify on his shield, he glanced back over his shoulder, only to discover another two men had joined forces with the first two and were now also launching magical missiles at him. He knew he had to change his tactics, and fast, or he would never make it to the temple before his magical reserves were depleted. He decided to use the buildings as best he could to block their shots. He switched streets and alleys at every opportunity, denying the pursuing men as many direct shots at his party as he could. It seemed to be working for the first few minutes, but soon more and more of the Empire agents joined forces. He didn't dare slow down to look, but by the number of shots he was now taking, he estimated that at least 10 were now chasing them. He was extremely relieved to see the temple come into view as he turned the next corner, but equally dismayed to see yet another two men in black robes between him and the temple. There was nothing else he could do apart from run straight at them, zigzagging down the street, avoiding as many blasts as he could. It worked better than he thought it would. Several of the blasts coming from the chasing pack missed them and impacted on the shields of the two blocking the road ahead. What happened next amazed him. From the temple doorway emerged over a dozen paladins, each armed with a sword and shield and in full chain mail. They charged the two men blocking the road, cutting through their magical shields as if they weren't even there, killing both men instantly. Lusam felt the double shockwave of their deaths ripple through him even before their lifeless bodies hit the ground. As the paladins came within earshot, he heard the distinct voice of Herschel call out from within the group,
"Don't stop! Keep running, boy!"
Lusam tried to reply, forgetting he still couldn't speak, so he just nodded and continued running. The paladins formed up behind his party, retreating along with them and using their blessed shields to block the missiles coming from the dozen or so Empire agents now closing in on their position. When they approached the entrance to the temple, the giant door opened and they were beckoned inside by another couple of paladins. Just before he ducked inside, Lusam turned to see how the main group of paladins were doing, and he didn't like what he saw. It looked like two of them had been injured and were being carried by several of the others, which left them exposed and extremely vulnerable to further attacks. The Empire agents were now concentrating their firepower on the weakened area of the paladin's defenses, pounding it relentlessly. He indicated for Neela and Alexia to remain inside the temple, and they seemed to understand what he had in mind. With Neela and Alexia safely inside the temple, he no longer needed to shield them, and instead focused on sending his magical barrier to fortify the weak spot in the paladin's defensive line. The magical shield had an immediate positive effect on the speed of their retreat, enabling them to more effectively carry their injured men and reform their defensive line. The first volley of shots that Lusam's shield absorbed almost brought him to his knees with the sudden massive drain on his reserves. Having seen the paladins reform their defensive line, he quickly narrowed his magical barrier so it only covered the gap in their defenses, meaning most of the impacts were now being absorbed by the paladin's shields instead of his. As they approached the main entrance, several of the magical missiles impacted on the walls surrounding the door, but seemed to do no visible damage. Lusam stepped inside the temple's walls, out of harm's way, and immediately felt the spell restricting his speech fade away. Moments later, the men were safely inside the temple and the door firmly barred behind them. Lusam heard the impacts of several more magical missiles, but no one seemed concerned about it, and it soon ceased. Lusam could see that one of the men was badly injured, the other less so, but would still require medical attention. They were both carried into the large room where Lusam had first met Herschel and laid down on a long table against the far wall. One of the paladins quickly assessed the injuries of the worst of the two men.
"How is he?"
asked Herschel, concern evident on his face. The man assessing his injuries just shook his head at Herschel's inquiry, indicating there was no hope for him.
"Lusam, you have to try and help him," Neela whispered at Lusam's side.
"I intend to," Lusam replied. "Those men most likely saved our lives out there. I'm not about to let any of them die if I can avoid it."
"He looks pretty beat up to me. I'm not sure anyone could do anything for him,"
Alexia said, looking at the man on the table.
"If anyone can help him, Lusam can,"
Neela replied, squeezing Lusam's hand, then nudging him forward towards the unconscious man. He walked over to the makeshift bed, where Herschel was now praying for his fallen comrade's soul. Lusam wanted to speak with Herschel first, but he felt strangely uncomfortable breaking into his private prayers, and decided to just try and help the man if he could. Lusam placed his hand on the man's chest and sent his mage sight into his body, searching for whichever was his most life-threatening injury. It didn't take him long to see that it was his heart that had taken the brunt of the magical impact. It amazed Lusam the man still clung to life at all with his injuries, but he put that out of his mind and quickly set to work repairing his damaged organ and surrounding tissues. Knitting the muscles of the heart together while they still moved was no easy task, and several times he lost his concentration, having to restart that part of the repair again. After about 10 minutes, he had managed to repair his heart and moved on to the surrounding damage caused by the impact. Apart from a few minor blood vessels that needed to be repaired around the main impact area, the rest was just superficial and only took him a few more minutes to complete. When Lusam opened his eyes, he could see that the wound was now fully closed, even though the amount of blood on his chest suggested otherwise. He reached over and grabbed a clean cloth from the end of the table, then wiped away the blood to reveal a perfectly healed chest. He had a gasp come from the man who had first assessed his injuries as he saw the results of Lusam's work. Herschel, however, was still deep in prayer and completely oblivious to his comrade now regaining consciousness right in front of him. As he woke, his hand instinctively went to his chest, but found no signs of trauma. Gingerly, he sat upright and swung his legs over the edge of the table. Lusam playfully put his fingers to his lips, indication for the man to stay silent while Herschel continued his prayers. The two paladins got the joke immediately and nodded their approval, whilst Lusam went to see the less injured man. The second man had suffered an impact on his left leg, and it was a quick and simple task to heal him in comparison with the first man's injuries. Once he was fully healed, Lusam indicated for him to also remain silent, which he did. Unfortunately, the other 20 or so men in the room must have found it far more difficult keeping their humor in check, as one after another escalated from chuckling to themselves to bursting out in fits of laughter at Herschel's expense. Herschel opened his eyes, ready to berate his men for their lack of respect for their fellow paladin about to die on the table in front of him. But he was cut short by the man himself.
"Sir, I think praying for my soul may be a little premature, just yet," he said, grinning at the look of astonishment on Herschel's face.
I don't understand. How's this possible?"
Herschel said, also noticing the second man up on his feet too.
"I don't know how he did it, but our young friend over there placed his hand on them, and their wounds healed before my very eyes,"
said the man who first assessed their injuries. The two men Lusam had healed were already thanking him verbally and shaking his hand enthusiastically as Herschel approached him.
"Well, boy, I've never seen the likes before, I can tell you that,"
Herschel half whispered, shaking his head.
"Thank you, Lusam. We are going to need every paladin we have if we're going to turn the tide of this war, even two as useless as these,"
he said, pointing with his chin and smiling at the two men, who were now reenacting and embellishing their recent battle prowess for the other men's entertainment. Neela nudged Alexia with her elbow and said under her breath with pride,
"Told you he could do it."
Alexia only nodded, still speechless at what she had just witnessed. Chapter 26. Zed and Cole emerged from the forest well after dark. They crossed the river using the ferry service opposite the eastern gate of Stelgad. The ferryman had refused to cross the river during darkness to pick them up at first, but Zed had contacted the closest Empire agent on the other side of the river using his ring and had him convince the ferryman to change his mind. While they waited for the ferry to come and pick them up, Zed listened in on the many communications that were being conducted around and within the city by his fellow agents. He found it very strange that there was no mention of the boy or the paladin he was traveling with. He knew they were at least a couple of hours in front of them and would have probably made it to the city just before dark. He made some discreet inquiries as to how many of his brethren had made it to the city already and was surprised by the answer. Every gate into the city was currently guarded by at least four of his fellow agents. Patrols freely roamed the streets within the city, and every road in or out of the city was also well guarded. The information seemed to confirm his suspicions. Either the boy and paladin were not yet inside the city, or they hadn't entered via a gate.
"Shouldn't we let someone know that the boy came through the forest, or that he should still be somewhere nearby?"
Cole asked. Zed gave him a withering look of contempt, grabbed him by the collar, and pulled him close to his face.
"We're not telling anyone anything. Do you understand me? You may not have anything worth returning to the Empire for, but I do. And I refuse to spend a moment longer than I have to in this cold, wet, godforsaken land."
Zed spat at him, still half-strangling him with his own collar.
"But Lord Zelroth knows all. He can read our thoughts through our rings. Everyone knows that,"
Cole exclaimed. Zed burst out laughing, releasing his collar and dumping him on the ground at his feet.
"You fool. If he knows everything, why are all our men searching for the boy inside the city and on the roads, instead of just waiting at the edge of the forest to kill him when he came out? Don't get me wrong, I have no doubt that Lord Zelroth could read our minds if we were standing in front of him, but through our rings, that's just a story told to keep us all in line. Think about it, how better to ensure our complete loyalty than to spread the rumor that every thought can be heard by him?"
Zed said, looking down at Cole still on the ground at his feet.
"How can you be certain of that? Everyone knows he can kill us any time he wants by using our own rings against us. We all pledged our lives to serve him, knowing failure meant certain death,"
Cole replied sheepishly.
"No, I can't be certain of it. But what I can be certain of is this. If you try to contact anyone to tell them, I will kill you,"
Zed said menacingly. Cole visibly paled at his two choices. Betray Lord Zelroth and possibly risk death, or betray Zed and find certain death. Zed knew the dilemma Cole now faced, but he felt little or no remorse for his situation. He knew Cole was easily controlled, and that he may yet need his pitifully small supply of magic in his pursuit of the boy, especially now he traveled with a paladin of Aisha.
"We can still kill the boy and return home to the Empire heroes. All you need is a little faith,"
said Zed, begrudgingly offering Cole a hand to stand up. He took his hand and pulled himself up to face Zed.
"How can you be sure that we will be the ones to kill the boy, when there are so many others looking to do the same?"
Cole asked.
"Because they are all looking in the wrong place for him. Look at the city.
Tell me what you see.
A big wall,
Cole replied. And what do you see beyond that wall? Zed asked.
I can't see anything beyond the wall, apart from that tower poking out over the wall in the distance,
Cole replied, confused.
Exactly. That tower is a temple of Aisha, a training facility for their paladins, if I'm not mistaken. Where better to enter the city than directly into the temple itself, especially if you happen to be traveling with a paladin? If they want